Well, afternoon everyone. I hope we're all well. Second day. Only one more session to get through after me and then you're free for the day. So, just to kind of kick off, this talk is about additional styling for flare skins. It's primarily an online HTML output kind of thing. So, if that's not your thing, this probably isn't the talk for you, and there's a lot of other good talks. So, I won't feel offended if you leave now. Just want to make it clear that this is what I'm talking about. For anyone that wasn't at my other talk, a bit about me, I'm the associate product manager at a company called Disguise. We manufacture what we call a real-time media server. That up there is a picture of the Super Bowl in 2015. Our product is a software and hardware product. And on the particular Super Bowl show, we powered that big circular projection mapped object in the middle of the floor. So that's the kind of stuff that we do day in, day out. We use Flare for authoring our help site. So a lot of our customers are show producers, show operators, and stuff like that. It's kind of important to them because generally if people are using our help, they're either pre-production for a show, which means, you know, time is money and they need help, or they're on a show and, you know, Katy Perry or someone's on stage and they really need an answer quick, or they're actually running the show and it's show critical, they need help quickly. So, you know, our help site's pretty important to our users, so Flare's pretty critical to us. We use it day in, day out. I've been using Flare for about 5 years. I'm the only Flare author, so I split authoring Flare with all of my product manager stuff at the same time. I'm based in the UK, so I flew over here just for this. So anyone else from the UK, feel free to touch base with me. I've bumped into a couple of other UK people around. Be good to meet some more. And if you want to have a look at my work project, it's help.disguise.one. It's a highly customized top nav advanced output from Flare. So what we're going to cover in this session, we're going to talk about what are skins. A lot of people probably use them, but maybe aren't as aware of, you know, actually what they are under the hood. We're going to look at inspecting those skins in HTML output to actually get an idea of, you know, what does the skin look like once you actually compiled your output. And then we're going to have a look at editing the skin via CSS to add additional properties. I'd encourage you to ask questions as we go along. I've got quite a lot of time built into this talk to take questions. I've sat in some other talks today and yesterday, and the questions along the way thing seems to work well. So feel free to interject, ask me questions as we go, not a problem. So first things first, what are skins? Well, skins are essentially kind of black boxes that MadCap have pre-built for us. They allow us to add large chunks of style, layout, functionality to the HTML outputs without spending a lot of time, you know, actually writing them from scratch. Anything that is a skin, you could write from scratch yourself. You know, the big kind of thing to understand about Flare that even I myself didn't understand for a good couple of years using it is, you know, it's entirely open. If you want to write something, you can just write something yourself. You can just write the HTML in there, and as long as it's good code and it can be read by the browser, that's fine. That's all skins actually are. Inside Flare, they're treated as Flare objects that have pre-exposed parameters. So if you open the skin editor, you get a list of pre-exposed stuff that you can edit in that editor. But it's not an exhaustive list. The style sheet editor, for example, that is an exhaustive list. Everything you see in there is what Flare supports, whereas the skin editor isn't quite the same. And that's what this talk is about. It's about adding more stuff to that. So, you know, when you find a particular property that's not in that list and you want to add it, this is what we're going to do. So there's a really basic image there of, you know, you've got the skin, which is your black box, and it goes into the project compiler when you hit build for your target, and then it spits out a load of code on the other side. So you'll start with your skin, which will be one single object, and actually in the output, if you look at what that code is, you'll see very few references to it being a skin anymore. It will be a div, or it will be a UL, or, you know, one of these things. So usually a mix of all of those things together, and we'll have a look at that a little bit later in the talk. So skins in Flare, they're created from the project organizer. All of the exposed parameters that you can see in the skin editor, you can edit in that WYSIWYG interface. So, you know, what you see is what you get. You can edit until your heart's content. And it usually gives you a pretty good idea of actually what it's going to look like in the output. It's usually pretty accurate. It's really good for, you know, the top nav, the menu skin. They're the two that I'm going to focus on in here because they're the two that I use in my work project. And then you associate that skin with a target. So, you know, if you wanted to have different targets with different, you know, different style top navs or different style menus, you could totally do that. Skins, the skin editor in Flare totally supports you doing that. So it's just this object that you're editing internally. Now, when you get to the output, what does it look like? Well, as an example, I literally just used the standard TopNav advanced project template. So I'm going to be primarily manipulating two things. I'm going to do the TopNav, and then I'm going to do the side menu as well. So the side menu there I've circled in red. So that is, you know, our menu. What was our menu skin in Flare is now this menu in the output. So what we can actually do is we can inspect the skin. We can have a look at that in the output, and we can use the developer tools to do this. And we can do that. There's two ways of doing it. You can right-click on something and say inspect. Alternatively, you can press F12, and F12 will open the developer tools, and you can find the skin or the piece of code in the developer tools. And when we view the skin in the developer tools, we find that it's not this black box anymore that we were dealing with in Flare. And I'll show you what I mean. I'll jump out of PowerPoint and I'll jump into my web browser here. So I've got a project set up. You guys are going to get this emailed out to you after the talk. I've made some modifications. You can see later on, I've kind of spoiled the surprise, but we're going to put some icons up there in the top nav. But if I inspect this skin on the right-hand side here, if I right-click and say inspect, I get this this developer tools thing. If you're using online output and you don't know how to use the developer tools, I would highly recommend you learn how to do so. If you've learned HTML and CSS, the logical next step, the logical two things you should probably learn next is a bit of basic scripting and how to use this tool. This tool will save you a lot of time, a lot of troubleshooting. It's really, really useful. It's split into two areas. The left-hand side is the DOM, the document object model. So that is all of the code that makes up this particular page. And then the right-hand side is all the styling elements for the particular part of the DOM that you've got selected. So I've got the menu selected here. Now, there's almost no reference to this being a skin anymore. You can actually read the code. It's a UL. It's a UL. It's got a class of menu. It's got a class of skins, side menu fixed, and it's got an MC component class as well. Whenever you see anything with an MC component class, you can pretty much guarantee it came from a skin. It's a good way of knowing whether something came from a skin or not. So I've got this selected in the DOM here, and you can see it highlighted there on the right-hand side. You can see that blue and the green color. There's also another color that you can't see there, which is orange. These three colors signify content, padding, and margin. So blue is your content. That's actually how much space the content is taking up. The padding is the green color, so it's showing you how much padding you've got on a particular object. And orange is the margin. So this is really, really useful if you've got an element in your output, doesn't matter whether it's a skin or not, and you want to look and see, okay, how much padding has it got? And you can hover over and see it's got 10 pixels of padding. Really easy to understand. So that's how you go about inspecting a skin. I'm going to jump between the PowerPoint and the browser quite a bit. So locating the skin in the DOM. Now, if you did what I did, where I just right-clicked on the black background of the menu, it jumps you to the right part of the code, the right part of the DOM for that particular element, so you don't actually have to find it. Now, the developer tools are split into two key sections. There is the left-hand side, like I said, which is the document object model. That is all of the code that makes up that page. And then the right-hand side, which is the style properties. Now, there's a ton of other functionality in the developer tools that goes way beyond what I could ever talk about in this session. But the main thing we're going to be focusing on is what's in that elements tab. Now, when the Flare project compiles, I already compiled this one just to save a bit of time. It combines together the master page elements, the topic elements, the styles, the skins, the variables, etc., and it writes all of that into standard HTML, which is why when you look at the DOM in the browser, it looks different to what you will have seen in Flare. Because when Flare compiles, it actually takes a load of other stuff and adds it all together so that the browser can read it. You're going to be able to find a lot of additional code in that page that didn't exist in your Flare project. There's going to be tons of stuff in there that you won't see in the Flare project. It only exists after you've compiled the project. It looks a bit overwhelming at first, but it's really not. If you actually read through it, a lot of it makes sense. All of the elements that are in there will be standard HTML elements that you will have seen in your project. They'll just have a load of additional kind of classes applies, IDs applied, and that's always a mixture of stuff that's come from the master page or from some kind of default style sheets. But it's all stuff that you will understand if you actually read through it. It looks overwhelming, but don't be scared by it. You can traverse the DOM with your mouse in the developer tools. So as you move your mouse up and down that DOM list, it's just a giant tree. You know, you can toggle and open parts of it and close parts of it as you go up and down it. And when you hover over items in the DOM, you'll see them highlighted live on the page. I like to detach my developer tools so it kind of floats over the top of my browser. By default, they're docked, and there's a little button that allows you to undock them. But as you hover over items in the DOM, you will see them highlighted in the page. And that, like I said, that will be a mix of blue, green, and orange. So blue is your actual content. Padding is green, and then margin is orange. Really, really useful if you are working in a topic and you've got, like, you know, a note div or something like that, and it's got a load of indent, and you're trying to work out why on earth it's indented or whatever. You can hover over it and go, oh, it's got 50 pixels of margin, so that's why it's got that. It's really easy to work that kind of stuff out. And a top tip as well, you can actually edit the DOM directly on the page. So if I jump back into my browser here, and I'm on this page. If I right-click, let's say I right-click on lists. Just move this over here. If I find, there's the H1, which is what lists is. It's highlighted there. I can just collapse the tree. If I left-click it and drag it, I can actually move it to somewhere else, and you'll see lists will move. So you can edit everything in this live. You can edit the HTML, and you can edit the styling. This is really useful if you're sat with, you know, the marketing team or a designer, and they're like, oh, we want to do this, this, and this. It's actually quicker to do it in here, work out what they want, and then go and make the change in Flare. Because if you make the change in Flare, you have to make the change, and you have to compile the project or preview the project and show it to them, and maybe they say, oh, actually, we want to put it somewhere else. It's actually, if you learn how to do this, it's much quicker to do it in here, get them to decide on what they want, and then go back into Flare and actually make the change in the source project. Now, the key thing to know is, we haven't altered the Flare project here. If I reload this page, lists is back in the place that it was before. So you're literally just live editing the code, but as soon as you reload the page, it's all gone. So it's really, really useful for experimenting, you know, troubleshooting things, working things out. It's ideal for that. So we know how to locate the skin in the DOM. I mean, I say locating the skin, like I said, I mean, it's not a skin anymore. It's just a chunk of code. Viewing the CSS properties is the right-hand side of that pane. So the CSS properties that you see on the right-hand side of the pane will be a big mix of stuff. You'll see all of the styles from your style sheet. So in this particular project, the two style sheets in there are mainstyles.css and stylesforhomepage.css. You'll see all of the style sheets that Flare creates or bundles with the output. So examples of that would be foundation.css, texteffects.css, or just standard styles.css. The odds are if you see something coming from styles.css, it's almost always coming from a skin. So that's another good way of you knowing exactly where a piece of styling information is coming from. You can see all the properties that are applied to that element as well, and exactly where they're coming from. So down the right-hand side there, you'll see, you know, the padding, the padding properties. You'll see what kind of list style you're using. You know, all those different properties that you would have been setting in your skin editor or even in your style sheet editor, you'll see there on the right-hand side. You can force elements into particular states as well, which is really useful. You can force them into a hover state. So let's say, you know, you're hovering over a link. Usually when you hover over a link, it changes color. You can actually force the developer tools to show it in that hovered state, and you can change the color live if you want to see what it's going to look like without having to do it in Flare and compile and come back and so on. And if the element's inheriting properties from elsewhere, which it almost always is, you can see exactly where those properties are inheriting from. So as you go down that list on the right-hand side, you can see exactly where it's inheriting the properties from, right down to the body, and you'll see what it's getting from the body, right down the cascade, which is really, really useful. You can live edit those properties as well. So just like I did with the DOM, you can go in there and you can live edit any of those properties. So you can select the item in the DOM. If you don't have it selected already, you can right-click and say inspect. And then in the styles pane on the right-hand side, you can left-click an existing parameter to edit it. So your background color is a really good example. If I'm looking for something, certainly skin-related, you know, skins consist of so many different levels of content. If I'm looking for something, the first thing I'll do is start changing background colors to try and get an idea of what element is what. Because if you change something to red, it's really obvious that that element, it's really obvious where that block element sits and how big it is, and can help you understand, you know, what particular element you need to target. So that's a really useful thing. The tool auto completes as well. I'll show you a demo of this in a second. So if you're not too familiar with CSS or you're still learning CSS, you don't know what all the properties are, and most of us don't know what all the properties are, as you're typing into this, into the developer tools, it will auto complete what the parameter is. So it's really, really useful to help you learn. And if you're using this, I guarantee after using a couple of months of this, all of a sudden you'll find yourself editing in Flare's text editor in the style sheet rather than using the style sheet editor. It'll be much faster. I absolutely promise you. So if I jump out of here and go back into my browser, I'll just show you exactly how I change the background color of that list, of the side menu there to red. So if I inspect it, move over here. I've got it selected here in the DOM on the left-hand side. I can see because I've hovered over it, it's highlighted. And these are all the properties of that particular item. And I can see I've got background color there is set to this. Now, I could change that. I could just type in red, and it goes red. So now I know I've changed the background color of the skin. So I know I'm working with the skin here. Now, if, for example, the color of the text changed, then I know I'm editing the wrong thing. Another useful thing to know is you can toggle them on and off. So I can actually just toggle off the background color. Now the text is white, so the whole thing disappears. It's actually still there. You can hover over it. It's still there. It's just that the text is white. So you can toggle things on and off. And that's really useful if you're trying to, you know, work out why something is, you know, working in a particular way. Maybe if you toggle, for example, maybe the line height off, you see, oh, it's getting line height from somewhere else now. So you can get an idea of, you know, where it's getting all of these different properties from, and maybe, you know, how it looks if you have one of those properties disabled. You can also see where they're coming from. So that's coming from styles.css. And more importantly, there's this number right next to styles.css. That number is the line in the style sheet that is coming from, which is really important. So for the skins, not so much, but for your own style sheets, like when it's main styles.css, you know, how often have you sat there in a project and thought, where on earth is that style coming from? I can't find it. That's the line it's on. And if you click it, it will actually open the style sheet on that line in the developer tools to show you, hey, it's this thing here. This is where it's coming from, which is incredibly useful. So if I jump back into Elements here, close that out. Like I said, if I reload the page, it's all gone anyway. So there's no risk to doing any of this. So we can live edit those properties, and we can actually add new properties as well. So if, for example, one of those properties wasn't actually specified, like maybe I hadn't already specified background color, I could actually just go in there and I could write that in. This is really useful when something isn't in the skin editor. So, you know, a good example of something that's not always in the skin editor, border radius is not in any of the skin editors. Now, for example, you want to round the corners on your menus. The only way you can do that is by finding the selector, which is what I'm going to show you how to do in a couple of slides, put it into your style sheet, because you can't do it in the skin editor, so this is the only way you can do it. And if you want to, you know, have a look at how that actually works, but it's not in that list of stuff that was available there that I just showed you, I can go here and inspect again. So there's no border radius in that list. Now, let's say I want to see what it's going to be like. I can go into this element.style section here at the top. I can left-click. You get a little cursor. Now you can just start typing CSS. So I'm going to say border-radius. And you can see it's auto-completing. It knows. It knows everything that could possibly go in there. So like I said, if you're not too sure on what things are, you can start typing a word and it will show you the rest of the CSS values that have that word in. So I can say border radius and I can say 10 pixels. And now you can see I've got rounded corners on my menu item. So I know that CSS is good. So what I can then do is I could take that back into Flare and then actually put that in my style sheet. And then when I compile, I'll have rounded corners on my menu, which is really useful. So just jumping back into my presentation here. Any questions thus far? I've been going pretty fast. Anyone? Okay. So you can add new properties. You can add classes as well. This is really, really useful. I don't know about you guys, but in my style sheet, I have tons and tons of generic classes for all sorts of bits and bobs. I have things like .hidden, .red, .blue. So, you know, as I'm working in my project, anything that I actually want to change, I'll usually just add a generic class to. You know, if it doesn't need, you know, if I don't need a div.note, I might have just like a .note class, which maybe applies, you know, like white text or something like that. You can apply those in the developer tools as well. That's really useful if you know you've got a class in your style sheet already with a load of stuff specified. There's no point typing all of that stuff into the styles editor on the right hand side. You could just add that class. So what I could do, I've got a class of hidden in my Flare style sheet. So what I could do is I could go in here, inspect, and I could say, you've got this CLS button at the top here. If you click that, you get this add new class. As well as adding new classes, you can see the classes that are already applied to that element. So I can see it's got MC component, it's got menu, it's got no content, and it's got skin side menu fixed. So you could toggle those on and off. So if you've got an element that's got a load of style classes applied to it, you can toggle them on and off and see what effect that actually has on the output. So I can add a class of hidden. Oops, hidden. And it auto-completes that, and all of a sudden it's hidden. Because it's taken the class that was in my flare style sheet and applied it to that particular element. And if you look there in the DOM, you'll be able to see that it's got a new class of hidden applied. And again, you know, I could just toggle it back off again and it's back again. So this is really useful if you're working in Flare and you've applied a class to something, and then in your output, it's not actually, you're not seeing the effect that you thought. You can go in there and you can see, well, first of all, has it actually got that class? Because if it hasn't got that class, then there's a mistake in the Flare project. Either the class is applied to the wrong element, or, you know, maybe the class isn't specified right, or maybe there's no actual style information in the class. You can actually start to work out what's wrong with it. And then more importantly, you can toggle it on and off to see, hey, does this actually have an effect? Because I've lost count of the amount of times where I've applied a class to something, thinking it's going to do one thing, and actually I looked in the output and it doesn't do anything like what I thought it was going to do. So that's a really useful tool for that. I jump back into my slideshow here. So how does all this help me? Must sound like I'm kind of rambling on here. Well, the developer tools actually allows you to find the selectors for any skins that you're using in the output. And once you've found the selector, you can take that selector and bring it back into Flare and put it in your style sheet, and you can add style parameters to that didn't necessarily exist in the skin editor. So now what we've had is we've had the skin going into the project compiler. It spits out this chunk of code. And what we can do is find the selector using the developer tools, add that selector to, in this case, it's mainstyles.css, but it could be any of the style sheets. And then when the project compiles again, it's going to get all the stuff from the skin editor, but it's going to get the additional stuff that you specified in your style sheet. So you get to mix these two things together. Now, sometimes there can be a conflict. If there's a conflict, your standard CSS rules are going to apply. It's going to depend on whether something's got an important tag. It's going to depend on, you know, what was higher in the two style sheets. So sometimes this can create clashes. I would recommend only doing this if something's not in the skin editor. If it's in the skin editor, do it in there. There's almost no reason to do it in the style sheet if it already exists in the skin editor. You're just creating a duplication, which really doesn't serve anyone. So how do we find that selector? Well, remember, the skin's no longer one single object after you've compiled the project. So it's going to consist of many different HTML elements. So those skin selectors can be quite long and complex. So the menu, for example, when it's in Flare, it's just a single object. It's a single skin file. Menus, once they're in the output, are actually really complex, unordered lists. So the top nav, for example, is actually an unordered list with more unordered lists inside, depending on how many levels deep it goes. If it goes 10 levels deep, that's 10 unordered lists that have children and more lists inside them as you go down. So when you actually look at that code in the DOM, you'll see that it's actually really lengthy. It's no longer one object. So we can use the dev tools to grab either the entire selector or just a subset of that selector, and usually that's useful enough to do what we want. Usually a good place to start is what I've highlighted there on the right-hand side. It's usually the element, the selector that's at the top of the styles pane, and usually you can copy that into Flare and do something and usually see something happen. That's the one that I would start with. Usually, like I said, it's not a good idea to specify things in CSS that you can do in the skin. There's really no point in doing that. Sometimes the selector you think you need actually isn't what you need. Because there's so many nested elements inside these skin items in the output, sometimes you think, you know, you need the A tag, and actually you might need like the parent or the parent parent to actually do what you visually want to do. So it's not always as simple as getting that particular thing. Sometimes it's deeper down, sometimes it's further up. So you need to kind of learn to traverse the DOM and work out which element you actually want. So you can copy the entire direct selector for the use in your style sheet. So you can right-click on an element in the DOM, you can click copy, then do copy selector, and you can paste that selector into your style sheet. So I'll show you how to do that. So I can go in here, right-click, inspect, and then I can right-click on here and say copy, and say copy selector. And I could go into Flare in my style sheet here. I'm just going to put a couple of line breaks in and paste it in. Whoops, that's not what I thought I was going to get. Copy. Selector. Let's try a different one. Copy. JS path. Maybe that's got a really funny selector. I've never seen that before. Let's try something else. Let's try this one. H1. Copy selector. There we go. So now you see that you've got the selector of, it's just got an ID of list. So that is the selector for that particular H1 element. Now, when you do this in something like the top nav, you actually end up with a long string of stuff. So some of these ones that I've got in here at the top here that do the icons, you can see you've got like nav, and then you've got div, dot middle title, dot section, div, div, ul, list, list item. So they can be these really long strings, and usually they start with the body and end with the actual elements, you know, an anchor tag or a paragraph tag or whatever. So they're not usually particularly useful. I mean, you can paste the whole thing into the style sheet and give it some styling information, and it'll probably work. But you're literally being very, very specific. You're saying that particular thing on that page and only that page gets this styling information, which is usually not what you want. Usually you want to kind of be a bit more generic and say, you know, any ULs that have your class of menu that have a class of MC component are going to get this particular styling information. So copying the whole selector usually isn't exactly what you want. So you kind of have to copy the whole thing and then remove parts of it to the point where it doesn't work, and then go back and add the thing that you removed when it stopped working, and then you've got a pretty good selector to go with. You should always slim it down. You should always remove things like, you know, body. You probably don't want that. And ideally, as many levels as you can, remove that so you don't need them. And you should end up with a kind of healthy-ish string. It's going to be longer than most of the strings that you're used to using if you use the text editor, but still, you'll end up with something that's relatively efficient. Sometimes, like I said, just taking the last element and its class is enough. Like I had in the example there, circle. You can just take, you know, ul.menu, and that's probably enough. So using the selector in Flare, once you've actually got the selector from the developer tools, you can paste that in the style sheet. And as an example, you know, you could end up with something. I think I did this for one of the side menus. You get like, you know, content body, div.side content, and ul. So that side menu is an unordered list. Inside the div.side content, that exists in your master page, you'll be able to see that. That's nested in another div, and then that's inside content body. Some of that you'll be able to see in your master page as well. You can paste it into the text editor, put some curly braces in. If you're comfortable in the text editor, you can start typing in CSS, and you'll be able to, that thing will get styled when you compile the output. If you're not comfortable working in the text editor, all you need to do is put the selector in there, put your curly braces, it's valid, and then you can close the text editor, and you'll be able to find that selector in Flare style sheet editor, just as you normally would with H1s, H2s, etc. Usually they'll be under complex selectors or something like that at the top, but they won't always be immediately obvious. Once you've pasted that selector in, like I said, you know, under complex selectors in the style sheet editor, menu selectors are built from UL elements. So the menu proxy in the top nav, they're going to appear under custom lists. So, you know, if you're using custom lists in your project, anything that's UL or OL will appear in that custom lists tab at the top of the style sheet editor there. The skins are no different. If you're not comfortable working in the text editor, the other way that you can do this is you can get the selector and you can go to the advanced, you can go to add selector in the style sheet editor, and there's a drop down in there called advanced selector, and you can put it in there and it does the same thing. Personally, I find it much easier to do it in the text editor, but that's perfectly possible. So I've got a couple of practical examples in here. Top nav icons. I saw this in somebody's project a couple of years ago and I thought, wow, I actually really want to do that. And there was a background image icon in the skin editor. I thought, great, I'll just put a background image in, and all of a sudden, you know, my top nav items will have background images. But was it that simple? No, of course it wasn't that simple. The skin editor property actually doesn't let you specify the position of where that image goes. And it doesn't let you specify whether the image repeats or not. And actually, they're pretty critical things. If you just drop a background image in there, it's kind of behind the text, it's all over the place, it's no good. So I actually had to do this in CSS. So what I did is I found a couple of different ways of doing it, and I put them into this presentation. So the first method you can use is nth child. You might have used this elsewhere in your CSS. And what nth child allows you to do is it says, hey, the nth child of this particular element, I want to apply this styling to. And then we've also got the attribute selector, which is the other way of doing it, which allows you to specify a style for an element when an attribute equals a particular value. And they both have different use cases. So the nth child method. The nth child method is useful for maintaining property specification even when the topic linked to that menu item changes. So what I mean by this is you're always, if you've got four things in the top nav there, you've always got one, two, three, and four, no matter what topics they're linked to. What the nth child method does is if I replace the first topic, which right now is getting started, with what's new, the icon will still stay there because it's just based on which number item in that list is there. Now, that's really useful if, you know, you have an icon that is always going to be item one and an icon that is always going to be item two. And what you can see here in the demo is I've just taken the selector that is used for that particular top nav project, the default project, found out what the selector is using the developer tools. I've then appended to the end that this wasn't in the developer tools, the nth child part, I had to write that in myself. So I just specified nth child one, which is going to be that first item, and then the A tag, because that thing is actually a link. And then I've set the background URL to be images, and I've got settings white. It's a scalable vector graphic. And then the 20 pixels and 16 pixels is just positioning it correctly to the left-hand side of the text. And then I've set it to no repeat, otherwise it repeats in tiles, and you really don't want that. Now, the attribute method is really useful when you have something in the top nav and you want it to be fixed. You only want that icon to show when you're using a particular link, for example, is usually where you would use the attribute method. So attribute selectors only work when an attribute in the selector actually matches the element on the page. So what I've got here is a selector that actually targets what it's looking for is it's looking for an A tag that has a href that contains a string consisting of what I've specified in the quotes there. So this will only work when the topic in the top nav is in the content folder and it has A underscore getting started and it's called getting started. It has to have that string in the topic title, otherwise the icon will not appear. This is really useful if you have a topic like, for example, getting started that has its own icon. If that moves from, you know, position one to position three, the icon will move with it because essentially the icon is linked to linked then to the href. Whereas the nth child wouldn't do that. If you swapped position one and three with the nth child method, the icon's actually going to stay with the first position. So if the href changes, the icon will no longer appear. So there's no link between what's in the style sheet and what the topic is actually called. You'll find using Flare, if you rename a topic, you know, it gives you that, hey, do you want to update links dialog? If you rename the gettingstarted.htm, it's going to give you that dialog. You'll click update links. It's not going to update this. It has no idea that this is there. So you have to maintain this. You'll have to go back in there and give it the new name because there's no reference link between those two things. Important thing to know as well is main styles and styles for homepage are slightly different. What I mean by that is that the markup on those pages are slightly different in the topics and in the homepage. Reason being is because they use two different master pages. So sometimes you'll find that one of these selectors works great in the homepage, but then it doesn't work in the topic pages. So what you'll actually have to do is you might have to put a slightly different version of this into the main styles CSS file, or you might have to find a selector that works for both of them. There's a number of attribute selectors. I just got this list from W3 Schools. You know, there's a really basic one that just is like attribute, and when attribute equals the target, it will work. And there's other ones such as, you know, begins with, ends with, contains, or equals this very particular value, or, you know, ends in PDF. There's all sorts of, you know, different things that you can use this attribute selector for. Most things in Flare's output actually have an attribute anyway. Flare's pretty good at giving stuff attributes because it needs to understand, you know, where things are. If something doesn't have an attribute, the nice thing about HTML is you can just add one. You can literally just, you know, put a tag on like a H1 and say data equals something, and you can specify it. As long as it's valid, it doesn't really matter. You can add that to your code. I actually did that in my Mega Menus talk. The very, very first version of the JavaScript I used actually used a data tag that I'd written into the HTML to actually call the different items. There's no limit there. You can just write that into Flare. Flare won't understand what it is, but it doesn't matter. It's your code. So that's perfectly valid stuff. So the attribute selectors are really, really useful for doing this kind of customization. There is one particular attribute you should that you might want to know about if you're working with these large menus, the top nav, the side menu. If you inspect something, certainly in the top nav, you'll find that it has an attribute of MC data ID. It's MagCap data ID. That number, it starts with zero and ends with, you know, a higher number. That number is usually, if it's not the exact one, it's usually close to the nth child of what that thing is in the list. So if, for example, I go in here, go back into my browser, and I right-click on this, and I have a look, you can see you've got this list class has children. You see this data MCID, and it says number 3. Now, it started at 0, and it's number 3 because it's the fourth item in this thing. So you've got 0, which is the first one, 1, 2, and 3, right? Now, you could go... My work top nav, for example, is about 450 topics and goes about 6 levels deep. I could go 6 levels deep in something and find something with data MCID of like 76. And guess what number in the TOC that item is? It's that. That's how you find out the particular nth child of something, is you can use that data MCID to find out exactly how deep in a particular list something is. So if you want to use the nth child method, that's the way of finding an nth child beyond, you know, 4 or 5. It's pretty easy when you're looking at the top nav because you can just count them up. But when you're talking about multiple levels deep in a list, it's pretty hard to know what that nth child is. Whereas that data MCID is a pretty dead giveaway for roughly what that number is. Usually it could be one either side as well, depending on if it's starting from zero or not. So that's a pretty useful trick I found when doing these kind of customizations. So back in my PowerPoint here. Another useful example, borders on the submenu. You can't do borders on the submenu in the skin editor either, for any of the menus, I don't think. The submenus are just unordered lists embedded inside another unordered list. That's what the top nav menu actually is. It's just a massive unordered list. There's nothing else to it. But the skin editor is not an exhaustive list of these styles. So, you know, like I said earlier, borders are a pretty good example. If I wanted to round the corners of my top nav submenus, you can't do that in the skin editor, whereas you can do it with this method. So I found the selector there, copied it into my Flare style sheet, put a border radius on, specified a border color, and now I've got a nice border that goes around the outside of my my submenus. Now, taking that a bit further, because there's nested items here, I can have a different border color for that second list down. So you could have a different border color for each individual one. You could have a different background color for each one. There really isn't much limit to what you can do with this. And the reason being is because, you know, that second unordered list is embedded in the first unordered list, but it's a separate list. It's still in the same menu, still in the same grand TOC. But it's a separate element, and if you know what that element is, you can target it with different CSS in the same way that I've, you know, done different icons for each of the top nav buttons at the top there. You could use it to add hover effects as well for the CSS, for the top nav. The way to think about this is generic. It could be for the top nav, it could be for the side menu, it could be for the side nav. The methodology here is the same. I'm just using top nav because that's what I use at work. But this can be applied to any of these HTML5 skins. The methodology is the same. So hover effects are very similar. They're going to have a very similar kind of selector, but it's going to have a pseudo class on the end. So you can set some hover properties in the skin. But in the skin, they're set on the anchor element rather than the whole list item. And sometimes that's not what you want. So if you wanted to set it on the whole list item, you can't do that. So for example, I haven't done it in here, but border would be a good example. If you set border on the anchor element in something like the top nav, you'll see it just around the text, because you can see there the content box for the text in the first image actually isn't the whole list item, right, where I've got the icon there with the padding. So you'll only see it around the text, and actually you might actually want it around the whole list item. So the skin editor is only editing it, only assigning those style properties for the anchor element. And actually, if you want to do it at the list element, its parent, you've got to do that in CSS. And that's what's happened here with the icons, because the content box sizing is different for the anchor element to the list item element. If I set the hover effect in the skin to red for that particular item, and then set the hover element for the list item to, you know, have a red icon to match what the text is going to be, you'll notice that actually you can end up with white text and red icon, depending on where in that element your mouse is hovered. So sometimes you have to think, actually, I don't want what's in the skin editor. It's close, but I actually don't want that. I actually want, you know, its parent item, and you'll have to do that using this methodology. So the end result would be, when you hover over a particular top nav item, you get a red image and red text. So the red text, in this case, should be coming from the skin, and the red image is coming from this methodology of having this long selector with an A dot hover on the end and saying, hey, I'm going to change that image when the mouse hovers over it to this red color instead. So, conclusion. There isn't really much you can't do with this functionality. You can pretty much do anything you want. The world is very much your oyster. I've done it, you know, in this example with skins. You can do it with anything. You can do it with divs. You can do it with H1s. Anything at all. You should only really do it with skins if you can't do it in the skin editor. If something's in the skin editor, do it in the skin editor. Don't do it in CSS, because you're just going to end up with a conflict between the two. And now for one or two things, it's fine. It's not going to end the world. But if you've got a really large project and you've done this for, you know, multiple items across multiple skins, and if you're working in a team, people aren't going to know exactly what you've done. It's going to take ages to troubleshoot, so I'd recommend not doing it. You should really test vigorously before deploying as well. What I found when I did the icons the first time in my project is the icons appeared locally. They were all good. And then I shipped it to the server. And then, you know, I cleared my cache. And the next day I went on there and I was like, oh, there's actually only half the icons that I put there. There's the second and the third item had icons and all the others didn't. I thought, well, this is really obvious that it's broken. Anyone, even if they're not using Flare, going to look at this. Our users are going to be like, well, someone's screwed up there. And that was because actually the file location for those images was different on the web server than it was locally on my machine. And actually what I should have done is put it on the web server and had a look and actually check that it worked, because all of those links to, you know, those icons, they're relative links, right? And they're specified as relative links in the style sheet. Now, if that relative path is not the same on the web server, it's not going to work. It's going to be missing icons. If you go into the dev tools in the console, it's going to show you a lot of red lines saying, hey, I'm missing this thing. So you might actually want to think about doing it differently. What I did with our icons in my work project was actually I didn't use relative links. I encoded them in the style sheet using Base64 encoding. Some of you might have done that already with fonts. It's a really good guaranteed way of making sure that particular thing is in the style sheet, because you're not relying on relative links. So definitely test vigorously before you deploy. Browser CSS compatibility can be an issue as well. Different browsers support different CSS properties. You know, Chrome is pretty good. I do all of my development in Chrome. The vast majority of our users I know use Chrome, because I use Google Analytics to check. But people will still use Safari or, you know, God forbid, Edge even. And actually, a lot of this stuff isn't supported in Edge. So you really need to know that. And ideally, you should know, you know, what browsers your users are going to use. And, you know, if they're overwhelmingly using a browser that doesn't support some of the stuff you want to do, you kind of have to accept that you're probably not going to be able to do that. So you should definitely have an understanding of, you know, what browsers your users are actually using. Flare doesn't support all current CSS properties either. So a good example of this would be Flexbox. It's not so important with skins, because you're generally not using Flexbox with skins. But you'll quite often find that you put something in your style sheet, and whenever you load a topic or you load up a project, Flare will give you a load of messages saying, hey, this is invalid, this is invalid. It doesn't matter. Just, you can just ignore it. As long as it's valid CSS or HTML, when you actually compile the output, it's fine. But the XML editor won't be able to give you, you know, a reliable view of what that's going to look like. And likewise, any of the stuff that you're doing using this methodology won't show in the skin editor. So even though I've added all of those icons to the style sheet, when I go into the skin editor for the top nav skin, I'm not going to see them. You only see them when you compile a project, because only when you compile a project does it take the stuff that's in the skin editor and the stuff that's in the style sheet and combine them together. So there'll be no no reference to that before you compile the project. A couple of things to be aware of. The main one is these selectors can change without warning. I can't say that strongly enough. Whenever this happened recently, when Madcap brought out the new project templates, and they added some new project templates in, a load of people that have done customizations on the Slack user group are like, oh no, everything's changed. So they can change, and they're not going to warn you that they're going to change. One day you'll just open Flare and they don't work anymore, usually when you've done a project upgrade or you've started using a new template. So the thing to understand is it's your code. You are going to have to maintain it. If you're not comfortable with doing that, this is not the kind of thing that you want to do. Normally, this is pretty much why I'm still using 2017 release 3. It's because I'm dead scared of upgrading something and all of my customizations breaking. But whenever you upgrade, you know, test it all out as vigorously as you can, because, you know, it's not Madcap's fault that it's going to break. It's your code. You need to own it. It is going to require extra testing and project maintenance. It's not always going to be immediately obvious to a new Flare user. When I first started using Flare, I had very little idea of, you know, what was in the skin editor, what was in the style editor. You know, it took me a long time to learn that. So whenever I write any of this custom stuff into my my style sheets now, fortunate that I'm the only person that uses my project, but I still comment it anyway. So if you have to hand it over to someone, add a comment in the style sheet that says, hey, this particular crazy looking thing does this. So at least someone can look at it in plain English and go, oh, okay, I'm not going to delete that out. It does something quite important. It's common sense, but I've seen a number of style sheets that don't have that. And even when you know CSS, you can look at it and think, oh, that's not important, I'll get rid of it. And then you go into your output and something's broken. Sometimes there can be a conflict with something that's specified in the skin and something specified in the style sheet. Usually, you might not even notice this. Something, you know, might just get overwritten. And usually in the developer tools, you'll see a strike through. You'll see that it's just been overwritten by something higher up in the chain of precedence. Other times, it will take the skin as the precedent, and maybe you don't want that. That's the kind of time where you start putting like an important tag on the end of your property. Generally not considered good practice. Sometimes with these things, because, you know, the foundation style sheet or the skin editor might have something that you might not be aware of, you might have to force a particular property to say, look, I know what I'm doing. Just use the one that I've specified and not the one that you think you're supposed to be using. There's many different ways of targeting stuff, targeting elements in the DOM, as well as the ones that I've discussed here. This is literally just scratching the surface. I definitely recommend reading up on the more advanced CSS selectors. W3 Schools is a great resource for this kind of stuff, because it lists every single type of selector that you could possibly think of. That's where I got the attribute list from. It seems a bit overwhelming. Some of them don't always make a lot of sense, and that'll be because, you know, your project might not use them, Flare might not use them, but it's certainly good to get an understanding of what they are, so that when you're, you know, looking at stuff, it's not totally alien to you. And as with everything, you know, practice makes perfect. If you want to get really, really good at this, I'd recommend inspecting every single web page you ever look at. Because all of a sudden you'll start getting comfortable with, you know, what's coming from where. The icons, I just saw that in someone else's Flare project. It's the only one on the Madcap customer showcase site that had icons. And I was like, I want to know how to do that. So I just inspected it until I worked out what it was and then used it in my project. You know, you'll see stuff on the web and you'll think, oh, that's really nice. I want to know how that works. Inspect it and carry on inspecting until you know those dev tools inside out. It will definitely help you in building and maintaining and customizing your Flare projects. Do have a couple of acknowledgements. No one is a total expert. No one knows everything in Flare. I'm certainly not one of those people. Most of this functionality I actually learned from a guy called Dave Lee. Some of you probably know him. He's very active on the user forums, very active on the Slack community. I wish he'd come and talk to these things, but he doesn't seem to want to do it. But he taught me how to do this, and one day he said, look, hey, you can just go in the DevTools and work all this stuff out for yourself. And I was like, mind blown. I was like, this is insane. And started doing it to customize all sorts of other stuff. And the lesson that I took from that was that you know, it's very hard to learn where Flare ends and where web development begins. And I meet so many people that say, oh, you can't do this, this, and this, you know, because it's not in the skin editor or it's not in Flare. The truth of the matter is you can write whatever code that you want in there, as long as you're willing to support it, you can write whatever you want, and as long as it's valid HTML or CSS, it will just work as long as the browser supports it. So don't be put off by not being able to find something in Flare. You know, if you want to customize, you want to do something, look and carry on looking until you find a way to do it, because that is the way to kind of learn all this stuff. So that's it. I'll take some Q&A, and hopefully that was some useful information for you all. Any questions? Yeah. So whenever you make a style sheet, it's in your resources folder. It's going to be linked to usually either it's going to be the project default or the target default. Generally speaking, if you're styling a skin, you don't have to make a separate, you know, skins style sheet. You just put those selectors into your main styles style sheet. Whatever style sheet you're already using for your project is where they go. Because projects can have multiple style sheets anyway, but what happens is when the project gets compiled, it will take main styles.css, and then it will take all the other ones that Flare knows about, like foundation, text effects, and styles, and compile them all together. So you'll see in the developer tools, you'll see different elements referencing different style sheets. All of your content, like all of the stuff that you've written in there, the H1s, the H2s, almost always reference your style sheet, which if you're using the default Flare one, is going to be mainstyles.css. Whereas when you look at anything that, you know, any magic that Flare put in there, so for example, the skins, good example, things like the search bar is another skin, you'll see that that's coming from the styles.css. So what that is it's all the stuff that wasn't in your style sheet, it was all the stuff that was in the style, in the skin editor, and that lives in its own separate style sheet. Does that make sense? Usually, stuff doesn't exist in both. Usually, you know, something exists in my style sheet and something will exist in styles.css for the same element, but it won't be the same CSS property. So there generally isn't a conflict. You know, the line height, for example, is specified in the skin editor, and so that the menu is going to take the line height from that styles.css as opposed to taking the line height from, like, you know, what's in my style sheet. So generally speaking, there isn't a conflict. That's why it's important to only specify things in your style sheet if you can't do it in the skin editor. Any other questions? Kind of surprised. I was expecting to get like bombarded with questions. Great. Okay. Well, in that case, you've got an extra 8.5 minutes of your day back. So thanks everyone for coming, and hopefully it was useful.